This is Perspectives with Barry Shainbaum on Faith FM and Hope FM 94.3 in Kitchener and Woodstock, and on Grace FM 105.9 in London, Ontario.
Good afternoon, and thank you for tuning in. Global warming has become the predominant issue of our times. Al Gore's film An Inconvenient Truth warns devastation to our planet is coming down the road. To avert tragedy, we must quickly move to reduce the amount of carbon dioxide spewing into the air. However, my guests today, John Moore and Tim Spencer, claim that global warming is being used as a smokescreen to obscure the real and present danger coming from a different direction, and much sooner than scientists and governments have predicted. John Moore has fought in Vietnam, conducted classified studies for the Special Forces, and worked as a private investigator and homicide detective. For more than 20 years, John Moore has researched global warming and its effects of abrupt climate change and rising ocean levels. John Moore is with us today on the line from somewhere in the greater vicinity of Davisville, Missouri. Hi, John, and welcome to Perspectives.
Thank you, Barry. Good to be with you, sir.
It's a pleasure to have you here today, John. John, so why would you say that global warming is not the serious issue that scientists and governments have said?
Well, that's not quite accurate. What I'm saying is that they're using global warming as a smokescreen to conceal what's really going on. And they're giving out the incorrect timetable for what they know and what they're saying publicly will happen in the future, Al Gore's film being the primary vehicle to deliver that message of abrupt climate change and rising ocean levels in the future. That's true. That's accurate. That's scientific fact. The deception in Al Gore's film and from NASA is twofold. First of all, the cause. It's not CO2 greenhouse gases that are created by human activity and cow flatulence. The second part of the deception is the timeline they give. The timeline put out by NASA and by Al Gore, which is the same timeline, as follows. Around 2016, things will start to get bad, and around the middle of the century, around 2050, they'll really get bad with abrupt climate change and rising ocean levels. Reality is quite a bit different. Reality is we don't have any time. The United States continuity of government contingency planning requires them to be done and have everything in place in 10 months by December of this year because they don't have any more time and they know it.
When you use the phrase continuing continuity of government, can you explain to our listeners what you mean by that?
Every major government, of course Canada has these plans, every large government on the planet has continuity of government contingency plans. These type of plans began during the Cold War to deal with the possibility of a nuclear war or some other major disaster of that nature so that the government could continue its operations. Canada has it, United States has it, England, France, Germany, Russia, China, and so forth. And that's simply the way large governments work. And they've taken that this matter of abrupt climate change and rising ocean levels and incorporated it into their contingency planning. And it's a matter of the most serious nature, of the most serious urgency, and they have to be complete with all their planning in 10 months.
Okay, I understand what you're saying. So going back to global warming, are you admitting that global warming is an issue, but it's dwarfed by the effects of this planet that will be coming by within 1 year?
Not quite. Around 1979, our government found the source of what's causing all the problems we're going through now. Within a year or two of 1979, the issue of global warming was decided upon as the cover story to conceal what would be happening 30 years in the future, which of course is right now. What's happening right now is really bizarre weather-related events that are starting to shut down entire regions of the planet due to ice storms, torrential rains, hurricanes, whatever it might be. So that was the cover story, and they're sticking to it. They want to have people believe that what's happening is something that's not going on, that it's an event created by human activity that can be controlled and can be brought under control by changing human activity. That gives people hope, and it provides a massive distraction.
4 years ago, NASA came out in the press discovering this Planet X. But what you're saying is way before this 4 years ago, governments and astronomers have known about the orbit of this planet called Planet X or Xenon?
Yeah, sir. Planet Xena was announced publicly about, I think, the summer of 06? It's been about 2.5 years ago. Not that it matters. It's kind of funny, Barry. They announced they found this tenth planet, Xena, and of course they named it. And there were press releases and front page news stories for about 3 or 4 months, and we haven't heard about it since, have we?
Very
that's
true.
That's kind of unusual in itself.
It's very true.
That's a big deal. You find a new planet and then don't talk about it anymore. However, that tenth planet is not the tenth planet that we're concerned about. There's a different tenth planet that's well known in certain circles. It's called Planet X. It's also called Wormwood in the Bible, by the way. And it swings through our solar system every 3,600 years, causing tremendous destruction at a planetary level every 3,600 years. And we just happen to be the generation that's going to live through this, and we're already living through it. Now, keep in mind that all weather on Earth, with the tiny exceptions of man-made, man-manipulated weather, which is a tiny, tiny percentage of all weather, is a result of energy from our sun. And our sun has been going bonkers. They've had to create new classifications for the solar flares. They got to be so large in the past 10 years. We're at a point now where it's becoming routine to have 12 inches of rain in 12 hours. It's becoming routine to have entire regions of countries shut down due to ice storms, snowstorms, hurricanes, torrential rains. That's becoming very routine, unfortunately. Very bizarre hailstorms. On and on and on.
We're seeing
dramatic increases in volcanism, both number and severity of volcanoes, and seismic activity, both in number and severity of earthquakes, which are part of the same phenomenon. However, even these very clever scientists can't connect that to your neighbor's SUV making CO2 greenhouse gases. That's clearly not connected to human activity.
John Moore, to bring this to present-day news, there are major wildfires going on right now in Australia. It's had a drought for years. And in addition, in the last few weeks, London in England has had snow they haven't had for decades. Do you tie both of these weather events to this 10th planet that's coming into our solar system?
Absolutely. If you look at a map, Barry, and you did watch my DVD, correct?
All 2 hours of it.
Okay. I encourage people to look at a map of the world, and if you look at England, Ireland, and Scotland, and you look at Moscow, you see they're both the same distance from the North Pole. England and Ireland and Scotland, you need a nice heavy sweater in most winters to get through the winter. Obviously, in Moscow, you need some very serious firm fur-lined jackets and so forth and heavy hats to get through a Moscow winter. The reason England and Ireland and Scotland up till now have had very temperate, mild winters is the Gulf Stream. That warm body river of water is coming through the ocean up from the Caribbean and swinging around over to England, Ireland, and Scotland, and down past France. Now, it was publicly announced in the fall of 05 that the Gulf Stream had lost half of its mass and velocity. Now, there's been no public announcement that I'm aware of since then of what's going on with the Gulf Stream. If, however, the Gulf Stream was maintaining its mass and velocity, it's highly unlikely England, Ireland, and Scotland will get this really bizarre snowfalls and heavy winter that they've had this past winter of 08, 09.
Is the Gulf Stream at risk of stopping completely?
It is. And the word I'm getting from inside the government, Barry, is the best PhD oceanographers on both sides of the Atlantic are watching this thing 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, in a scenario very similar to the Hollywood film The Day After Tomorrow, which that's the main subplot of the film, is oceanographers watching the Gulf Stream, which anybody can do, by the way, that has internet access. There's buoys out in the ocean that you can get internet access and watch them in real time, what the temperatures are in the North Atlantic and all over the Atlantic as far as that goes.
If you've tuned in late, this is Perspectives with Barry Shainbaum on Faith FM, Grace FM, and Hope FM. My guest on the line from somewhere around Davisville, Missouri, is John Moore. John, I'd like to clarify one thing with you. The 10th planet, now you've mentioned two different planets, so which is the planet that's coming into our solar system? Is it the 10th planet that NASA mentioned 4 years ago, or is this a different planet we're talking about?
Well, the planet NASA announced, Xena, is not the one that you and I are talking about or that we're concerned about.
Okay, so which one are we talking about?
What it's doing is really of no concern. The 10th planet that we are concerned about, Wormwood, Planet X, is the one we're concerned about. It's about 3 to 5 times the size of Earth. However, it has a much larger iron and nickel core, which gives it a lot more bang for the buck in terms of its effect on gravity and electrical energy interacting with the sun and with us. And that's the 10th planet that we're concerned about. It's coming up from the south. If you're at the Antarctic right now, Barry, you can see this planet. And in fact, which I encourage people to do Google searches. There's a number of them on my DVD. It's not well known that the Vatican, the Catholic Church, which is, by the way, an independent state, is well known for doing works of charity and saving souls and running charity hospitals. It's not well known that they have at least 3, possibly 4, professional-grade astronomical observatories at a cost of millions of dollars. What's that got to do with saving souls and running charity hospitals, Barry? I mean, absolutely nothing, obviously. They're very concerned. They built these observatories because they have their concerns based on their knowledge gained from the ancient manuscripts they have in the Vatican Library, the largest collection of ancient manuscripts on the planet. They've known about this for many centuries, and they knew where to look. In fact, they probably are the ones, the Vatican is probably the people who provided the scientific knowledge to direct NASA to send the Pioneer 10 space probe up in 1979 to go look for this object in space.
You mentioned several centuries. How far back has scientists or governments and or the Vatican known about this planet, which you said is called Wormwood in the Bible? Are we talking decades or hundreds of years?
Millennium.
Millennium.
The Vatican Library was established in the 300s A.D., and there's some speculation based on some evidence that when the ancient library in Alexandria was burned, that the Roman government took custody of everything important, the part of the collection that had to do with science and medicine and engineering and mathematics, while they burned up the old tax records, basically, to heat the Roman baths. And then when the Roman government was in the process of collapsing, that the Vatican government took custody of that ancient library. There is some evidence of that. That collection of scientific articles, engineering, mathematics, also had the evidence of the 10th planet the last time it came through 3,600 years ago.
John, how close is this planet coming to our solar system, and how close is this planet coming to Earth?
It doesn't have to come terribly close. I'll give you a couple of examples. Our moon, for example, which is not a terribly large rock, is 250,000 miles away from Earth. And every 24 hours, it makes all the oceans on the planet go up and down 20 feet.
True.
Professor McKinney calls that action at a distance. Anybody involved in police work or in psychiatric work knows very well what happens to people during the full moon. It affects people, and it affects the oceans. That's well known and well established. So the 10th planet, when it comes through our solar system, does not have to be all that close to our planet to cause massive disruption, which it will do, both directly with us, with gravity, and somewhat with electrically, and also with our sun, with electrical energy, which it's doing right now. And how close it's going to come, I can't give you specific numbers and miles or astronomical units as they use it. It's moving through our solar system. It will come through our inner solar system, loop around the sun, and then swing back down south over a period of a couple of years. It's going to take a while to accomplish this.
How tragic.
By the way, John,
how tragic.
It has a debris field. The planet X has a debris field of rocks 250,000 miles wide on either side of it.
how tragic will the effects be of this planet once it enters our solar system?
Here's a best-case scenario,
okay.
Which would be a repeat of what happened last time when Moses exodus out of Egypt. That was at one of the passages of Planet X, and that what happened, what the Hebrews observed in the Sinai Desert, the manna from heaven and all that stuff, was observed by people living in what's now South America, people living in China, people living in Northern Europe, all of whom left written records and had calendars. And Emmanuel Velikovsky, God bless him, he did something nobody had ever done. He took these ancient calendars and he lined them up to where they had the same events happening at the same time. And that's how he was able to document that. That would be a best-case scenario. A worst-case scenario would be more like what happened 7,200 years ago, or possibly the passage 3,600 years before that, where we had a 95% kill-off of everybody on the planet because of tidal waves washing over continents and things of that nature, most likely a severe pole shift causing that. Here's the deal, Barry, and it took me a while to figure this out. It's common knowledge in all geological departments of every university. There's a bulge of water at the equator where there's literally tens of thousands of cubic miles of water 400 feet above what we call sea level. Excuse me. Sea level is measured at Cornwall, England, and this bulge of water is held in place by the rotation of the Earth and gravity. And any disruption of the rotation of the Earth will dislodge that water, depending on if it's 2 degrees or 15 degrees or 45 degrees and how fast and how abrupt it is. It could be a very violent matter which would cause tidal waves hundreds of feet high rolling over continents. That would be a 95% kill-off for everybody on the planet. NASA may know or have an estimate of how bad it's going to be. They have not shared that with me, Barry, and I don't expect them to.
John,
I know the government has spent literally hundreds of millions of dollars, the federal government of the United States, I don't know about Canada, in getting prepared for this.
John,
extensive underground concrete shelters to take care of their people that have been chosen to be saved.
John Moore, what you're talking about is potentially tragic. Nonetheless, I'm pleased to have you on my program today, broadcasting out of Kitchener, London, in Woodstock, three cities just west of Toronto, Ontario. How open have the major radio and television networks been to your message?
I don't appeal to the nation. Like, I've been on Fox News several times, Barry, but this message is not going to be on Fox News or CBS or NBC or ABC nationwide. That's not going to happen. I haven't even approached them. I'm approaching the small to middle markets like yourself, where the radio talk show host and television host are still independent and not controlled by people in New York City or Los Angeles. And these independent talk show hosts on radio and TV are the ones who still have the ability to put out truth and put out accuracy.
What is the reason, John, that the large media concerns will not have you on?
It's too scary. It's too real. I'm talking about some of the most highly classified information that every government on this planet has. I've debriefed a number of Navy veterans. We're about to have one on here soon, that were at the classified briefings and saw the classified map, which you saw on my DVD.
Correct.
And that's not going to be tolerated. That's too scary. It's too real. It's not going to be allowed to happen, Barry.
So basically you're saying it's done as a business interest and that there are no mavericks in the larger media concerns and they just say it's too scary and we won't cover it. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, sir. Well, I was on Fox News nationwide talking about terrorism back in 01 and 02 a number of times. I got to know some of the producers in New York City and we would kick around different ideas and then we'd do a show. I got to the point where I was ready to talk about serious matters like the feel-good, make-believe security at these airports. And the young lady said, John, I'll run by my boss. She got back with me the next day. She said, John, it's too scary. We can't talk about it.
Wow. You know what we're going to do now, John, is I'm going to play a song, and then during that time, I'm going to call Tim Jensen and have him on for a bit.
Yes, sir.
And please
yes,
listen
sir.
Online. We're going to bring you back shortly. Thank you so much. We're going to take
okay,
a music break right now. Okay, so, John, actually, I will be calling you back
yes,
in about...
Spencer. Tim Spencer.
Right. But, John, I will be calling you back in about 15 minutes or so.
Hold on. Will I hear the show? You're going to let me go.
I'll have to let you go off the phone. I'll have to let you go on the phone line, but I will be calling you back in a few minutes.
Roger that.
Thank you, John. My name is Barry Shanebaum. This is Perspectives on Faith FM, Hope FM, and Grace FM. After we hear a brief musical interlude, Tim Jensen will be on the line from Salem, Missouri. Tim Jensen is a retired U.S. naval officer. During his tour of duty, he was assigned to the USS Nathan Hale and Submarine Squadron 18. Upon completion, he took a position at the Submarine Manning Office in New Orleans. At that office, in 1987, Tim saw a map of North America with parts of the map marked in white. He was told the white area is where he should live when he gets out of the Navy. During his naval career, Tim Jensen had a security clearance of top secret. Tim Jensen is with us today on the line from Salem, Missouri. Hi, Tim, and welcome to Perspectives.
Good morning, Barry. Thank you for having me.
It's nice to have you on the show. Tim, can we go right to that map you saw in 1987? Can you picture the scene for us? You saw a map, and what were you told in more detail about that map?
Okay. I worked in the submarine manning office at the Enlisted Personnel Management Center in New Orleans, Louisiana, in the Hebert Building. Directly across the hall was another manning office for a different part of the Navy. And on that, on the wall, was a map, sort of like the atlas-type map of the United States. Most of the map was colored in yellow highlighter. The areas that weren't, when I inquired, I was told were the safe places to live. At the time, I did not exactly know what that meant. But a few years ago, actually about 10 years ago, I saw Gordon Michael Scallion's map of the U.S. once the sea levels rose, and it was nearly identical to what I had seen in New Orleans.
Tim, we're getting a lot of distortion on your line. I don't know if there's any way to sort of check the line or something. It's a bit hard to hear you.
All right. Let me see if I can pick up on another extension. I do apologize.
Actually, you're better right now, so let's give it another try.
Okay.
Perhaps you could just say again briefly what you had just said.
I'm sorry. Oh, certainly. What I had said was I was stationed at the Enlisted Personnel Management Center in New Orleans, Louisiana, at the Hebert Building. Directly across the hall from my office was another manning office for a different part of the Navy. On that wall, there was a map, like an atlas-type map, of North America. A majority of the map was shaded in with yellow highlighter. The one time that I inquired what it was all about, I was simply told by Master Chief Petty Officer that if and when I got out of the Navy, I wanted to live in one of the areas that was white. In other words, not yellow. Can you hear me now, Barry?
Yes, we're having a bit of distortion, but I can hear you. Why do you feel this is being kept a secret?
Now, I'm having a hard time hearing you now, Barry. I'm sorry. Can you repeat the question?
Okay. John Moore, who was on just before you, said that the major media concerns are not at all covering the story, while it's the smaller stations with independent producers like my show that are facing this issue. Do you believe completely that there is a great risk to the planet starting in 1 year? And if so, why are we not hearing about it, and why are preparations not being made for the possible tsunamis that could be starting within 1 year?
All right, I will give you my opinion, and it's all it is an opinion. The reason that the government is not, in fact, most governments, as far as I'm aware, are not doing anything is because the scale of damage will be so great that they cannot prepare for it. They are doing, and I'm not saying I morally agree with it, actually I don't, but they are doing the only logical thing to maintain the continuity of government. And I'm not saying I agree with that, but it's the only logical thing for him to do.
But, Tim, if scientists and governments have known of this for years and decades and way longer than that, could a plan not have been put into place starting 50 years ago to face this if it's been known for such a long time?
I have no idea why they haven't. In my opinion, a lot could have been done. You know, for the sake of argument, let's say they didn't know about it till 1987, but I believe they knew about it much longer than that. That would have given us 21, 22 years to prepare. And in my mind, that would have been adequate. I won't justify what my government is doing or not doing because I don't understand the complete thinking. But to try to do something at this late stage, in my mind, it would be impossible to do.
So if the government would have started 20 years ago, what would they be doing, creating walls around the seaboards 100 feet high? Is that what one would have to do to keep the tsunamis out?
I don't believe that that would have been practical. I believe the only thing that could have been done is to evacuate people from low-lying areas that they know are going to be affected. I don't believe that the capability exists to build a wall from, let's say, Halifax all the way down to Key West, Florida.
Right.
I don't think, you know, that kind of capability exists. The same would, of course, apply on the Pacific Coast and the Gulf of Mexico.
Tim, in your opinion, is there any possibility, even 2 or 3%, that the worst that could happen, or even the least of the tragedies that could happen, will not happen?
Well, I cannot see any way out of the natural disasters that are going to occur. And again, I don't base this on any scientific, you know, I'm not a scientist. All I know is what I read, and I have read a lot. And the bottom line is, if the 400 to 600 feet of water that's around the equator in that bulge is displaced, it's going to go somewhere.
So what parts of the United States, first of all, because you are American, what parts of the United States will be underwater, and when will that start, according to information that you have seen or has been provided to you?
Okay. Basically, the southeastern United States will pretty much be underwater from what I've seen. Of course, the entire state of Louisiana. As John often says, the east coast of the United States, all the way to the Blue Ridge Parkway, will sustain damage. As far as Pacific, from what I'm told, about 100 miles inland, you know, this, you know, plus or minus 20, 30 miles, the whole west coast will be inundated.
Looking at the east coast of the United States, cities like New York City and Washington, will they be greatly affected?
Well, let's just say I wouldn't invest in real estate there if I was you.
I hear you.
Yeah, they will be greatly affected.
So if the people in the know are aware of this upcoming tragedy, the White House will have to be moved at some point to be run from another part of the country. Do you have information about what's going to happen to the government in Washington?
I don't have specific information. To me, it would be logical to abandon the buildings, to move the records and software and all the stuff they need to function in advance, and just be ready to move. I mean, if I was in the position of contingency planning, that's what I would do.
Do you have information on how these weather changes, serious weather changes, will affect Canada?
No, sir, I don't. John Moore is the person to talk to about that. I know nothing in reality about what will happen to Canada. The only thing I must assume is that low-lying areas will be flooded, will be affected by tsunamis.
Okay. Tim, do you have any more information on this that you'd like to add before I thank you sincerely for coming on the program, have a music break, and bring John Moore back on?
Well, yes, sir, there is one thing I'd like to add.
Okay.
John and I, working together, have created a new website called ruralsurvival.info. And we are in the process of putting lots of information up that can help people. And that's really about the only thing I had to add.
Okay, Tim Jensen, thank you very much for coming on the program. Well, let's hope and pray that the information both of you are providing is greatly off or even somewhat off. And time will certainly tell, but I thank you very, very much for coming on the program.
I thank you
and
for having me, Barry.
My pleasure, and have yourself a good day.
You too, sir.
Okay,
goodbye.
Bye-bye. My name is Barry Shainbaum. You're listening to Perspectives on Faith FM, Hope FM, and Grace FM. That's Kitchener-Waterloo, Woodstock in London, Ontario. If you're driving along the 401 corridor, Faith FM is listened to at Hope FM in Woodstock at 11 a.m. It's listened to in Kitchener-Waterloo on Faith FM 94.3 at noon and on Grace FM in London, Ontario, 105.9 at 2 in the afternoon. We're going to take a music break. When we come back, we'll have John Moore back on the line. Thank you. Back on the line from somewhere near Davisville, Missouri, is John Moore. John, you had mentioned to me that governments and agencies around the world are taking precautions leading up to what will start to happen in the next year. For instance, you mentioned the Vatican has closed their library, the Environmental Protection Agency library in Seattle has closed.
Actually, four libraries, but go ahead. No.
Say that again?
APA had four libraries. They shut them all down. No.
And what's the reason they've given for shutting down the libraries?
Kind of funny. The publicly stated reason is, quote-unquote, for cost-saving reasons. The Government Accountability Office has come back behind that and said it costs more to shut these libraries down than to keep them open. Plus, the scientists who work for the EPA filed grievances. It's like suing your boss. Filed grievances against their employer saying, we can't do our work because you've cut us off from the basic research material we need to do our work to keep people safe.
What's the reason they've given for closing these libraries?
Well, like I say, the EPA states for cost savings. The Vatican said they closed theirs because they had a structural problem in the main building.
Now, what you and Tim are speaking today is very, very, very scary stuff.
It's as scary as it gets.
Yeah, and
so go through a nuclear war than this.
Yeah, you'd rather go through a nuclear war than
absolutely.
What's going to happen because of the weather?
A nuclear war will be a temporary deal and mainly hit the military bases and large population centers. And there'll be a big, it would be horrific on one hand. On the other, there'd be less people dead and it would be easier to rebuild. Not that we have a choice. This is what we're in the process of entering is, this devastation beyond belief, Barry, worldwide. The most remote African village won't be spared from this.
John, what is the timeline of the first onset of serious, serious ocean level change?
There's two parts to that.
Okay.
First of all, the incremental slow rise from melting ice at Greenland and Antarctica, which we've been seeing, and that's really, unless a major ice shelf was to collapse, which that's, of course, a possibility, that will be fairly incremental and not a big deal for quite a while. The most dangerous thing, however, would be a violent, rapid ocean level rise due to a pole shift. That would be over a period of 30 days with no prior warning, at least none that the general public would be aware of. And that violent event would, like I say, take place over a matter of 30 days, wiping out all coastal regions of all countries on the planet.
If this happens, can you give us the month of next year? Because you're quoting basically a 12 to 15 minute month time period. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
When might this start? January, February, March of next year?
Well, it's a window of opportunity. It's not a specific date. And we're already seeing incrementally entire regions being affected. We mentioned England, Ireland, Scotland just now with a strange winter.
Right.
Australia with what they're going through.
Right.
Entire regions of the United States shut down. All normal commerce has been shut down in the southern part of this country across three states because of this ice storm. And on and on and on. We're already seeing entire regions have commerce shut down because of bizarre weather events. That will continue to become worse. As we enter 2010, we will see more regions affected for a longer period of time as these events become more severe.
Is there anything that world governments can do to reduce the effects of this coming catastrophe?
No, sir, none whatsoever.
Nothing at all?
It's beyond human beings to change, alter, or modify what's coming at us. All they can do is what they've already done, which is set up sheltering systems for their own people.
Should governments have started to work on this 20, 30, 40 years ago?
Well, obviously they could have and should have 30 years ago when they had their heads up. The decision was made to take care of their own people and let the rest of us go. That was the decision, and it's way too late to change it.
If they would have started to work on this decades ago, are we looking at building shelters for millions of people or building some type of wall to keep the waters out from coasters?
No walls. Human beings can't stop this from happening, and there's no walls that could be built to stop it. If they had shut down the economy and relocated two-thirds of the population into the middle of the country, that would have worked. But resources did not exist. They chose not to do that.
What's going to happen to Canada?
Okay, I knew that question was coming, and I'm ready to answer it.
Okay.
This is directly from classified briefings of the United States Navy. This is not from John Moore. It's not my opinion. This is what the Navy's been telling men in classified briefings for 30 years, that the Great Lakes will merge to become one Great Lake, stretching all the way to Hudson Bay, becoming an inland sea. So all the way from Chicago to Hudson Bay will be one great inland sea, which will basically split Canada in two, just like the United States will be split in two by the Mississippi River being 50 to 100 miles wide.
What will happen to southern Ontario, where we are based right now, Toronto, west of Toronto?
Well, Toronto's near one of the Great Lakes, isn't it?
We're right on Lake Ontario.
Right. Well, you can look at your elevation above the lake, and I don't have those maps in front of me. Google Earth does a real good job, by the way,
okay,
determining elevation, because you can move the little pointer around, and it'll give you, in real time, the elevation above sea level. There's a lot of dynamics here. It's a dynamic situation. The Navy maps, at least the ones that these men saw, if they specified the areas of the new Great Lake, the new inland sea, it was not reported back to me, and it does not appear in my map. I was told, however, that Wisconsin will be gone. One may look at Wisconsin and its elevations and take those elevations of Wisconsin and look around the Toronto area. If Toronto is more or less the same elevation above the lakes as Wisconsin, then that may give you a better idea of what you're looking at. Being near large bodies of water anywhere on the planet puts you at risk. That's my opinion based on what I know.
I'm sure there are some listeners today who are saying that both of you are kooks.
Well, they can say whatever they like,
right,
and believe whatever they choose to believe.
Right.
People should put this in Google. This is a simple Google search, CIA and Denver. And when you do that, you'll find not John Moore's opinion, you'll find the CIA's press releases that they're moving from Langley, Virginia, 90 feet above sea level on the East Coast, to the mile-high city, Denver, right now. And my sources inside the CIA, Barry, are telling me, John, they're not even telling us why we're moving. They're
right.
Simply saying, if you want a career and you want a pension, pack your bags and move to Denver.
John, but other parts of the U.S.
This is pretty outrageous information.
Exactly. Other parts of the U.S. government, though, are staying in Washington.
Not necessarily. There is a mirror image new capital that's been built at the Denver airport and other places around Denver where these people who are part of continuity of government will be ready to move on fairly short notice. Another Google search would be Plum Island and the word Kansas. Plum like the fruit tree, Plum Island and the word Kansas.
Right.
The Plum Island Animal Research Facility, which is on Plum Island off the East Coast, does animal research on very nasty bugs like foot and mouth disease, things that can kill animals and be very harmful to agriculture. I think it's a pretty good idea to have it on an island. When you got bugs that dangerous, that's a good thing, is to have them on an island, as opposed to in the middle of some of the most productive agricultural land on the planet, which is where they're moving it to in Kansas. We're seeing a lot of government agencies quietly being moved. Now, going back to the CIA, Barry, more people know the names of the wives of the Super Bowl quarterbacks than know something that's important.
It's true.
It costs $20 million.
It's true.
It's amazing how something this important and this major can be virtually unknown by most of the people.
And you also, I think Tim had also said that something this important is not being covered at all by the national networks, and I think you've said the same also. And it's not going to be.
But some things leak out, like another Google search. This was mainstream media last summer. The seed vault, at seed as in tomato seed, wheat seed, corn seed, the seed vault that was partly funded by Bill Gates up in Northern Europe at the edge of the Arctic Circle. That was mainstream media news stories the summer of 08. The seed vault has been built, and it's receiving the world's garden seeds and plant seeds as we speak. Now, Bill Gates is a very bright guy. He doesn't spend money frivolously, and he doesn't spend money before he needs to spend it. If they needed the seed vault in 2050, they'd probably be building it in 2045. But they built it right now, and it's receiving the world's garden seeds right now because they need it right now. The CIA is moving right now because they need to move right now. They have no choice. They have to be moved right now.
Where is the seed vault located? Where is the seed vault located?
Northern Europe at the edge of the Arctic Circle. I believe it's within the country of Norway, if I remember correctly.
Okay. What's going to happen to Western Europe, to Europe in general, when this happens, if it happens?
Well, England has already started moving their important government offices to high ground. They've been doing that for 4 or 5 years. And that, there's been some mainstream articles on that. I don't know about France. I don't know about Germany, specifically what they're doing. Germany has some mountainous areas, obviously, in Bavaria, where they can set up their continuity of government. France, I guess they got the Pyrenees Mountains down in the southern part of France they could use. So every government is doing what they think they need to do to keep their people safe that are part of their continuity of government contingency planning.
This planet that will be moving into our solar system next year, according to documents that you're quoting, again, you said in biblical times it was called Wormwood. Is there any name today that it's being called?
Usually Planet X is the most common name I hear.
Planet X.
Yes, sir.
Okay. What do astronomers say about the coming of this planet? They must be talking about it even on message boards online.
Yes, sir. Well, there is a living astronomer who I'm a student of his, Professor James McCanning. There's a link from my website, thelibertyman.com. Professor McCanning did his theoretical work and his at Cornell University, and has written several books on these matters. Another astronomer who's no longer alive, at the time he was alive, he was the supervising astronomer of the United States Naval Observatory, Dr. Robert Harrington. Dr. Harrington was interviewed in his office at the U.S. Naval Observatory when he was in that position as supervising astronomer. It's on video, and I've got a copy of the video. He talks about Planet X just like it was yesterday's football game. He describes the size of it, the orbit that it has, everything about this planet, just as if it's scientific fact, which for him it was scientific fact. Shortly after the video interview, he announced he was packing up instruments and going to Antarctica to look at this thing. And about 6 months after that, he was allegedly dead from a fast-acting form of cancer.
I hear you.
Well, you know, I'm not a threat to the government. I'm a private detective out here in the deep in the mountains of the Missouri Ozarks. People that are really a threat are people like Professor Harrington, men who have credentials and letters behind the name that give them credibility. A man like that goes public, that poses a real threat to the powers that be and keeping this information out of the mainstream media. I pose no threat of that nature. I'm just a researcher trying to get the word out.
In Canada, we have a national broadcaster called the CBC, Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, on radio and television. I will be pitching the message that you are giving out, plus Tim, to them. Do you think that there is any possibility that our national broadcaster will talk to you and seriously consider doing something on our national airways?
Seriously, Barry, I think there is a snowball's chance in hell.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Well.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I know better. I mean, God bless you, and I wish you the best for your efforts, but there's a snowball's chance in hell. This message will not get that kind of attention, Barry.
Okay. Well, let's look at what people can and should be doing over the next year to two.
Well, they need to educate themselves. That's the first step. my video, and can I give out the order line for my video, Barry?
Absolutely.
Okay. There's a 24-hour toll-free order line. That's 800-592-9543. I say again slowly, 800-592-9543. My video, Global Warming, What the Government Isn't Telling You, has enough information, and plus the Google searches that my editor put in there, that people can convince themselves and look at the real documentation, not stuff that I've made up, the real documentation backing up what I say. Once you've educated yourself, then you need to make a decision, the decision to stay in place or to have a remote safe haven that you can go to when the time comes. Most people are tied to where they live by career and family and social obligations, and that's a fact of life for most people most of the time. Some retired people or people who have very portable skills that they can take any place they want to go and have more flexibility in where they choose to live. The U.S. Navy, and I don't know if Tim mentioned this because I didn't hear the interview, the U.S. Navy's been telling these men in these classified briefings for decades that the Arkansas-Missouri Ozarks is one of the known safe havens because of its distance from large bodies of water, its altitude above sea level, its distance from major population centers, its mild climate, and plentiful water all contribute to being one of the known safe havens. Parts of Canada that have similar situations with a good altitude, a distance from major bodies of water, major population centers, would be desirable places also. And I can't tell you what those places are. I'm not that familiar with the terrain up there. But that's what people need to be looking at. Distance from major bodies of water, altitude above sea level, distance from major population centers, and a good growing season and plenty of water. Those are the things that will get you through this changed world, this new world that we're looking at.
John, in your opinion, when and if this happens, over what time frame or how many months will this be going on until...
It will go on for years.
It will go on for years.
We're already into it. We're already into it. You know, with entire regions being shut down for daily commerce with bizarre weather events. And the chances are the tsunami that we had a couple of years ago down in the Indian Ocean was an effect of the 10th planet, Planet X, interacting with us with gravity. So these events are already happening. They will go on for the rest of our lives. The worst period of time will be about a 2 to 4 year period of time once this thing gets into our inner solar system and this old planet of ours, this big rock that we live on, really starts rocking and rolling.
But over what time frame will this Planet X be in our solar system, and then when it moves out, what time frame are we looking while it hangs around us?
Like I say, it's already in our solar system now. I can't say how deep. But the deeper it gets into it, the more effects it has. There'll be about a 2 to 3 year period of time when it's in the inner solar system, swinging past us, around the sun, and then back out again. There'll be a lull, a cool down period when it's behind the sun. The sun's between us and it, where things are somewhat stable. But when it comes back out behind the sun, it'll start interacting directly with us again and with the sun. And causing more of the same effects as it swings back out.
John, this is very, very serious business what you're talking about today. Is there any final messages you'd like to leave our listeners with regards to what you're talking about today?
Well, my final message is people need to educate themselves, pray about this, talk to their loved ones, and reach a conclusion about what this means for them and what, if anything, they're going to do to prepare to deal with it.
John Moore, your website again is www.thelibertyman.com. Thank you very much for coming on the program.
Very good to be here. I look forward to talking to you soon.
I thank you for your time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
My name is Barry Shanebaum. This is Perspectives on Faith FM, Hope FM, and Grace FM. The subject matter today was very serious and potentially scary. It's also inspiring that there are people who are willing to speak out and talk about issues that they feel are of interest to the community and the planet. The possibility does exist still that what they're saying, well, it could be possibly be true, that the effects of the planet coming into our solar system will be less. I don't know. There are scary things that go on in the world. Let's hope and pray that if this does happen, that the effects of the tsunamis that come from the planetary pool will not be as serious as they predict. What is life if we do not take responsibility for ourselves and see what we can do to make our lives safe and of our loved ones? Do you have any comments on today's program? I'd love to get your feedback on today's content and any previous shows. My email address to reach me is barry@barryshainbaum.com. Shainbaum is spelled S-H-A-I-N-B-A-U-M. Again, my email address for any comments on the program, today's show, previous shows, suggestions for guests for the future, please contact me. Love to hear from you. Barry@barryshainbaum.com. I hope you can tune in next week when my guest here in the studio will be Robert Azzopardi. Robert lives in Toronto, and I call him a committed citizen on life's issues. We'll be talking about nuclear energy and sustainable living and nutrition and exercise. This is a man who, just between you and I, he's turning 70 this year. And if you look at him, you wouldn't think he was. So I hope you tune in next week. If you have a chance, please have a look at my website, which is www.barryshainbaum.com. If you travel, all three stations are streamed through my website. You can see I do professional speaking on overcoming adversity. And I'm the author of a book called Hope and Heroes. Thank you for tuning in. Please tune in next week. Have a fantastic week. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to Perspectives with Barry Shainbaum on Faith FM and Hope FM 94.3 in Kitchener and Woodstock, and on Grace FM 105.9 in London, Ontario.